Hello and welcome to Books on the Go, a podcast where we talk about our book of the week. I'm Anna Bailey Karras and I'm here with a special guest today, Jenny Colvin from the Reading Envy podcast. Hello, Jenny.
Hello, thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. I love the podcast and we'll talk about that. And Jenny, you're coming to us from, is it Greenville, South Carolina?
Yes, that's right. So it's like the upstate of South Carolina.
Yeah. And through the marvels of technology, and we actually had at my end some technical issues. So Jenny saved the day today. So thank you, Jenny. So a little bit about you, and then we'll talk about our book of the week. This week is An American Sunrise by Joy Harjo, the poet laureate of the United States. Jenny is a librarian. Is that right?
That's right. I'm an academic librarian, although right now I'm doing all of that work from home. So it's been kind of interesting to shift into that.
Yes. Yeah, we might have to, we'll find out more about that. And also the host of the Reading Envy podcast, which is one of my favorite bookish podcasts. And Jenny has a different guest each episode and they talk about normally sort of each choose three books that you've been reading, which I really love because there's always a diversity of books and Jenny reads very widely and often the guest will mention a book and you've read that or read something by the author. So it's a very good sort of back and forth discussion. And I think, Jenny, at the moment you're also doing a read-along of The Odyssey by Homer, the Emily Wilson translation most of you are doing.
We finished that one up and since everyone's at home, we jumped right into Ducks Newburyport, which I know that you have read.
Yes.
So I've only read the first 50 pages at this point. So
you've got a few pages to go.
Yes. I figured it would help to have a read-along because it's just so massive.
Yeah, I think it would. I don't think I had the read-along experience with it, but it's both massive and one of those books that there's so much in it that you want to share the experience with someone. There are the recurring motifs and there's so much about it that would be fun to do it as a group read.
Yeah, forward to it.
Enjoy that. So yes, I highly recommend Jenny's podcast and Jenny also bakes. So she also covers or reads and engages with cookbooks as well. And so if you follow her on Instagram, and especially at the moment, I think everyone's in there with you baking, Jenny.
Yes.
There's so much baking going on. So it's an inspiring kind of bookstagram, bakergram, Insta to follow as well. So, and have you been baking even more than ever? Are you in lockdown or?
Well, kind of. I'm very jealous of the people who've been making bread because I couldn't buy flour anywhere. And so today I made brownies out of almond flour, buckwheat flour, coconut sugar.
Yes,
so all these alternative ingredients.
We'll all be looking at the alternatives because it is actually the same here. Flour is harder to get. And I looked in my cupboard and I have quinoa flour and coconut flour, which I think I bought. I went on a health kick, but I never went on the health kick. That was the problem.
I got to stage one.
So I have these very healthy flours, which we might end up needing to cook with. We might have some interesting dishes coming up, but hopefully I'll be able to source some flour before then. Yeah. So working from home, how's that going with your reading? Are you finding you're reading different things or?
I think maybe just this weekend I've been able to focus on fiction again, but I had a really hard time for a few weeks focusing. I would just get distracted so easily. I'd be off in Twitter before I knew it. You know, I don't even like Twitter.
Yeah.
So I've been reading more like poetry, memoir. So the Harjo was really perfect for that. How about you? Are you able to read?
Yes, I haven't been too bad, but I've have had that tendency to go for more page turnery sort of books. And I've found I just have a little bit less patience. So if there's a book that's quite slow and involved and really that you have to concentrate very hard on, I don't necessarily have the patience or the concentration for that. Just because the news, it's not so bad now, but I think in the initial phases, the news was so all-consuming. Not that I was watching it that much, but it was just such a major event that, that a book really had to hold your attention for you to turn to that instead. I think that was why for me, not so much that I was becoming anxious about it, but just that the news was really grabbing attention, sucking away the attention from anything flimsy in terms of literature. It really had to be quite strong for me to want to come back to it. But now it's sort of tapered off a bit. I'm back into the swing of it. And it always depends on the book, I think, too. So
it does. And the nice thing about being readers, I would imagine you have several unread books at home still. So
I have so many. And so this year I've tried, and I do this all the time, but I've, you know, tried with a bit more focus to read through my TBR. And it's so satisfying when you can see the pile going down, and I just feel more in control when I'm reading one book at a time and then taking the next one off my shelf, rather than coming home with bags of new books that you just start to feel a bit overwhelmed, even in the best possible way. But I've found that really, really good. And of course, they're all books that I'm dying to get to, so it's not a chore. And any time I don't like it, I just put it in the pile to donate to the library. So I move through it, you know, that way. But yes, I could happily stay home, putting everything else aside, and be fully occupied for months, I think, with just the books on my shelf, which is, as you say, it's a nice way to be, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, let's move on to our book of the week, An American Sunrise by Joy Harjo. And this is a great suggestion that Jenny had. It was a book that was on both, well, on my shelf and I think on your radar as well, Jenny. And Jenny mentioned to me, which I'd forgotten, that it was National Poetry Month in April. So this was a great opportunity to get me out of my comfort zone and into poetry. And this is a really good idea. So Jenny Harjo grew up in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and she's a member of the Muscogee Creek tribe. She's the Poet Laureate of the United States. She's had many, many awards. I won't list all of them, but she's been given the Lifetime Achievement Award by the Native Writers Association. She's won the Wallace Stevens Award. She's had a Guggenheim Fellowship. She's very highly regarded. She's also a musician, a saxophonist, and a vocalist. She's released 4 albums, and she's part of a group called Poetic Justice, which I think is a great name. She's an artist. She's also, among her books, is also an award-winning memoir called, I think, Crazy Brave. And there's a wonderful musicality in her poems as well. So that really flows through, I think. And it's interesting when you look at literature and good writers, and it's not uncommon for authors to also have a musical background. And I think that they do complement each other. And she's spoken about storytelling and the traditions in her family. I think both of her parents in different ways were artistic or storytellers. Her mother was also from the Cherokee tribe. So she's had that background as well. And we'll talk more about their origins. And Jenny's got some more local knowledge about that as well. But Joy Harjo came onto my radar because she came to Adelaide for Adelaide Writers Week last month. And so I bought the book partly because I intended to go to that session and partly because it was just such a beautiful cover and a beautiful object. And then I ended up not being able to make the session, but I've just listened to it on you can download the podcast of it on SoundCloud. So that's really worth listening to. If you Google Joy Harjo Adelaide or, you know, Adelaide Writers Week. And she talks about this storytelling, and she said, you know, people have this image of the Native Americans sitting around the campsite and telling stories and passing it down, you know, from the generations. And she said, yes, there was that. I've seen that through my relatives, but really it was more about we were busy working, you know, surviving, and it wasn't quite that sort of romantic image. But she believes that we are all story gatherers, and in some form we're always gathering stories and then telling stories, whether it's on the phone or texting or in some, you know, other form, but not always the, you know, the campfire that people might imagine. But yes, very much she's all about stories and gathering stories and sharing them. She went to the University of New Mexico, where she discovered Native American poets for the first time, and that sparked her imagination about what a poet could be, or that she could be a poet, or she could tell her stories. And she's spoken about poets using words for transformation. And also she thinks Native Americans use words to speak with the land and to the land and the creatures on the land, and they don't see a big separation. They have a more holistic way of viewing both themselves and also how they use their words. And that comes up, I think, in one of her poems. She talks about songs, and it's something like, we used to sing songs about the animals and the rain and the sea and the land, and now we just listen to songs in earbuds that are made for money, you know, songs for money. That really, the reduction in the, or the, yeah, lack of richness in today's music, she might say. And so An American Sunrise is both poetry and also extracts from history and short paragraphs where she'll just give you either a historical extract from the archives or her own explanation about something and her reflections. And it starts with a brief summary of the forced removal of the Muscogee Creek people from the east of the Mississippi River, so Alabama and Georgia and those southeastern states, who were forced to go west and who were ultimately settled in Indian Territory, which is now known as Oklahoma, or now part of Oklahoma. And that was known as the Trail of Tears, although she's pointed out there were many trails of tears. It wasn't just one. And she also talks about the major battle, or the battle at Horseshoe Bend. There's a lot in this book. It's a very, very slim book, but there's a lot in it. One of the things that stood out for me was on one page, there's a very short paragraph, and it just says that the government made it, I think it was in 1837, the government made it illegal for Native Americans to practice their culture. And so that meant they couldn't tell their poems or stories, and really they couldn't create. It was illegal for them to create. And that lasted until 1978. And she spoke about that in Adelaide, and how but then she was asked about, is it then an act of rebellion to write a poem? And she said, well, sure. But at that stage, you know, it was an act of rebellion to be a human for us. You know, there's a defiance in the way that she speaks about that, but it was, that really shocked me. But also, there are also parallels in Australia. So whilst it shocked me, it also, yeah, it's not unprecedented that these things have happened. She also spoke in Adelaide about the language of the Muscogee Creek people, and which she says she doesn't speak as well as English. She writes her poems in English, but she's very interested in the language. There was an interesting thing she said about how people who do know that language really well, they always have a story about what a word means, and it's connected with land or with a place, or there's a story behind it rather than a straightforward definition. And that was so interesting, because there's a book that Annie and I read recently, which Annie absolutely adored, and I loved this aspect of it as well, called The Yield by Tara June Winch. And one who's an Aboriginal Australian author, and one element of that book, or one of the sections, is a grandfather writing a dictionary of the words of his people. And there are sort of over 250 different Aboriginal languages in Australia, so from the different groups of people. And so he was writing his dictionary, and each word, it was exactly as Joy Harjo was saying, each word has, there's a story, and then that's the, you know, the meaning of the word. So it's so interesting to see these parallels. So this is the book. It's very hard to sum up, but it's had a lot of praise and rave reviews. What did you think, Jenny?
I thought it was amazing. And I had read her memoir earlier in the month. So a lot of it to me was connected to her experience growing up. And so I knew a little bit more of that background. I was really fascinated just the position that she holds right now as Poet Laureate, which is an official government position, but it isn't something named by the president. It's named by the Librarian of Congress. And I felt like some of her poems were subversive in small ways, even in that kind of way, like the one called Let There Be No Regrets, which was a reaction to the Bears Ears National Monument when some of the monument was kind of taken away from being a national monument and turned over to corporations so that they could do oil drilling under our current administration.
Yeah.
So there's a poem about that.
There are some ways that she could be reflecting on modern situations, including refugees today who are fleeing from other countries and seeking asylum, including into the United States. So she does draw those comparisons, but very subtly.
They are subtle, but when she's asked about them, like I watched her interview on the PBS NewsHour, and she made it very clear that connection is intended. And I loved what you had to say about the words and the meaning of the words, because it seems like one of the things she's trying to do is to pull the context back to where people would have learned the words to start with. Because when she revisits the places in like Knoxville, Tennessee, where her grandparents lived before they were taken away, she feels all these presences of her ancestors and all of the things that they did and learned in that space. And it's the space that gives it part of its meaning. That was just very like prominent throughout the entire collection, I felt like.
Yes, there's that connection with land and place, which then they lost in a sense. But, and then that flows into identity. And there's a short poem about, or no, not even a poem, a short extract where she says, "Our knowledge is based on the origin stories of land, genealogy, and ancestors. If you know the branches of the tree of relationship between tribal clans and family members, then you know who you are," said the panther to its cubs. And I love that. I love that ending, but also I thought that was really interesting about that trauma. And we've seen this before in other contexts, but the trauma of not knowing who you are if you can't trace back the stories of your ancestors.
Yeah. The one, "Washing My Mother's Body," I loved that one so much because, I mean, she really shows how much honor is given to the ancestors, including her own mother. But there's so much in that poem, which is quite long, about how the generations kind of go forward and back in time at the same time. It's almost like a spiral instead of a linear path. You know, they're always there and they'll always have meaning, and the children will know the meaning because she's going to take that on herself. And I thought it was a beautiful tribute.
Yeah, I loved that poem as well. That was really, it was very personal, very intimate, but as you say, there's so much in it and it reads very easily. She uses quite simple language, except every so often she'll have a beautiful turn of phrase and they therefore have a lot more impact because she doesn't overdo that. But it's very accessible, I think.
Yeah. I've seen a few videos of her and she often kind of starts to sing with the words a little bit because they just blend so easily to being sung. Very interesting to watch her.
Yeah. And one of them is a song in this book, but I can imagine you could sing any of them really because she has that musicality in them. Oh no, I really loved it as well. And I don't read a lot of poetry. I think that's partly because you sometimes have to work a bit harder with a poem to fill in all the gaps because the poem is really it might still be telling you a story, but it's so distilled into the essence of the story that you have to fill out the rest of it. Or I could be wrong about that.
No, I think you're right.
That's how I sort of view it. So I think partly out of sheer laziness, I prefer just to be given the story in the way that you do with a novel. But it is such a joy to read, no pun intended, but to read good poetry. And it can be such a short poem or a short book, but each page gives you, it's so rich and it gives you so much to think about. And also the playfulness with language, I love. No, I think she has a very light touch, and I loved the themes and some of the trauma that runs through it, but then the sense of hope and the sense of defiance. Even with the washing her mother's body, you can tell that there's a real trauma behind that story. And I think she says at the beginning of that, she didn't have the chance to wash her mother's body in the way that our tradition she would have liked to.
Yeah.
And yet the poem doesn't feel heavy or sad, does it? It's got this, it's a beautiful, just a lovely remembrance of her mother. So I think there's that sort of positive outlook on the whole, but still giving you facts, unvarnished facts about these events that have happened, and makes you think about them. And as we said, it sort of relates then to the present crisis of refugees and just leaves the reader to reflect on that. She doesn't overdo it. She's not at all preachy. It's strong, but it's just with that light touch, just enough to make you think. But I loved that because you could sit with this book. I feel like I almost have to reread it because you could sit with it for days and days and days and just get so much out of it.
Yeah, I totally agree with everything you've said. I also think there's always a danger of poetry being preachy. And I think she prevents that from happening by making it all so personal, and it's filtered through her experience of it. So obviously she's always known about the removal of the different groups and the trails of tears, but yeah, to go back into the space where people had been and to reflect in that moment of, you know, what that's meant for her family and history and what's been taken away. It never felt like she was lecturing me. It felt like she was sharing, I guess, her perspective on it, which felt very much more approachable than a lecture would have. And I also feel like she's bringing people in, and I wonder how she thinks of that in her role as poet laureate too, because there's so much of a expectation of her to help others be creative. And, you know, she couldn't just be the poet laureate for the indigenous populations, of course, which is very small percentage actually. But I was thinking about, there's the poem about the earth's grandsons, where it's like, no matter dictators, the heartless, the liars, no matter, you're born of these, or you're born of those
who
kept ceremonial embers burning in their hands all through the miles of relentless exile, those who sang the path through massacre all the way to sunrise. And it ends with the sentence, you will make it through.
Oh, it's so beautiful.
And it seems like that could be read to anyone in any situation. Yeah. And she's being very inclusive in that.
Yeah, she is. And I think she's spoken about, she sees her role as the poet laureate as a sort of, well, she's self-deprecating in that she says, I'm still finding out what it means to be the, you know, what my job involves. But she said she sees it as being an ambassador for poetry. And yes, that would include really spreading the word and for everybody. So you're right, it has to be in that inclusive way. But yes, I loved how she did those little sections in between, partly because I think that gives you a break from because the poems make you think. And so it breaks it up a bit, which I really liked. And also because she doesn't assume that we know all this stuff, and she's aware that, well, it's partly her reclaiming history. And yes, also just understand, which will be fascinating when you're reading Ducks Newburyport, because I think Lucy Ellman does that a bit to some extent as well. But it's also not assuming that the reader knows all this, I thought was really, again, very inclusive. It's very welcoming. It's saying, it's okay if you don't know this. I'll just, without preaching at you, I'll just let you know with one or two sentences something you might not have known. And then she just leaves it there. She doesn't go on about it. And it's enough to really take your breath away, some of those historical events. But I really liked that. But then she'll have a piece about the saxophone. so it's really, it's not, yeah, it's got a lot of variety as well. She's quite curious and interested in a range of things, and it's not all about the history and all about the Trail of Tears, but that just runs through the book and gives it its heart, I think.
There's a few poems at the end. I remember one that was like a tribute to someone who turned 70, and I don't know if you noticed, but every little stanza increased by a word. And so by the end, I think there were 70 stanzas. I meant to go back and count, but it felt like she was so playful, but also she had structured it in this very creative way. So she's playing with a lot of form and ideas. Yeah. And that was just to like a birthday present.
I know. And that was the other thing. The poems are in different forms, aren't they? And again, yeah. I must admit that I don't know poetry well, so I couldn't tell you what those forms are called, but they, you know, they look different. So some of them are more narrative, and some of them are, there is one that is more like a song, and she calls it song one, song two. Then there's that one becoming 70, which is really inventive. So they are quite varied, which I think, again, kept it fresh for me. So whereas I think with poetry, because there is so much in a poem, if you're reading, you know, 100 pages, which isn't much, by the way, but 100 pages, if it's all the same style, could get quite dense, do you think?
Oh, absolutely. Poetry can take a long time to read because of that, I think.
Yeah. And often just because I'm maybe not the best reader of it, or because I get impatient. In the past, I've read a book of poems, and just because I read things to get to the end, and I get to the end, but think, I have to reread that. I didn't really take that in. It's so you can't read it in the same way that you would a novel, for example. And this one, I was conscious of that. And again, just because she broke it up with those extracts, I was able to stop and pause and really think about it. So I think I got more out of it.
I always read a book of poems at least twice. And another trick I've started doing is I read the acknowledgements at the end, because like some of the time it's helpful to know where a poem has been published. But I've noticed a lot of times people are attributing something, a poem to another poem. So maybe like there's one in here, because she puts the entire Emily Dickinson poem in here that she is basing a poem off of. But yeah, a lot of times they've taken a line from someone's poem and that started theirs. And there's a name for that, but I'm not going to remember what it is. Yeah. And so it kind of helps me to understand that poems are based on others, or that they're communicating. It's like a ongoing conversation. Like, how much poetry do you think you would have to know to see it the first time you read it? I'm definitely not there yet. So I need to read those little end notes for that.
Oh no, I'm nowhere near. I'm not close, not even close.
Yeah.
And in fact, Annie, another book that we just did on the podcast, Drive Your Plough Over the Bones of the Dead.
Yes.
I think, was it William Blake? There was a poet that she referenced a lot. And then she'd played on that poetry and capitalized some of the letters in the way that was considered Blakean. And all of that was lost on me, because I don't even have that level of background in poetry. But and Joy Harjo has also mentioned, I think she used to love William Blake as well. So I need to get onto this, the classic poets, I think, and just at least get my head around some of them.
Well, and you have to wonder if the Polish readers knew William Blake.
I know. Yes, that's right. I might not be the only one who missed it, but even still, it just goes to show you get even more out of it if you've got some of those other references.
Yeah, but I think it's okay to read poetry for what you get from it too. I don't think you have to necessarily understand everything the poet intended in order to have enjoyed reading it. I think that's kind of the beauty of it.
Yeah. And this one, again, as you say, because there are these personal elements, it is just giving you a sense of being human. So anyone can read this and, you know, you don't have to have the background because she gives you just enough to understand where she's coming from. But it also talks to you just on a human to human level as well. It's especially poems like the Washing My Mother's Body, but there's a lot in it that you can just read at that level, and it's really enriching and playful and thought-provoking. So no, I really recommend this. I'm so glad we read it.
Me too.
And you know, in National Poetry Month, I don't think I would have, if you hadn't given me that idea, I don't know if I think I would have had a National Poetry Month fail by not reading any poetry. So I'm glad we did that.
Does Australia have a National Poetry Month?
Oh my gosh, let me check. I don't know is the answer.
Yeah.
Because some of these things particular to each country, aren't they? But sometimes it is more global. So look, I'm
and
sure
I don't know who picks these things. So.
I don't know. Who's the boss of the National Poetry Month? I don't know. I'm sure we do have, well, if we don't, we should have a month where we focus on poetry in Australia. And I think sometimes they just adopt when it's being done elsewhere in the world.
Yeah. I mean, I do like it as a way to, I read poetry more than just in April, but I like having a focus where I have an excuse to kind of get back to the stuff I'd been meaning to read. So,
yeah, and I find that with Women in Translation Month too.
Oh,
it actually, it's not that I read all my books by women in translation in August, but it prompts me to think about that. And so before I done Women in Translation Month, I had all these books in translation thinking, oh, I read so widely, but they were all by men, you know, or they were translated by men or whatever. So it just prompts you to think even during the year about what you're reading. That, and was the Odyssey part of, were you reading that as part of poetry as well?
No, I think we finished it in March, if I'm not mistaken. So that would have been smart, actually.
Yeah, well, that counts. That's the original sort of epic poem, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, and the translator kept the same number of lines in the poem as the original, which has got to be an incredible feat.
Yes, I just loved it. I read that, the Emily Wilson translation, last year or the year before, and I really loved it. I hadn't read it before, so it was a bit of a page turner for me because I didn't really know quite how it ended. So
yeah, I thought it was very excellent.
Yeah, it had a lot of energy, that the form that she did it.
Yeah.
So no, it was fantastic. And what are you reading next? You've got Ducks Newburyport. That might be more than enough, I suppose.
Well, I'm reading, is it The Island of the Sea Women by Lisa C.
Yes.
My in-person book club had to cancel last month, but for this month, next Monday, we are meeting in Zoom and we're not going to let anything defeat us.
Yeah.
So I have to get to that book because that was supposed to be our March pick. So,
so the Lisa C book is the book club pick.
Yes.
Yeah, I haven't read her, but she had another book a couple of years ago. Is that right?
Yeah, I think The Snow Flower and The Secret Fan. Mm. I don't think I've ever read her, but I could picture the covers in my head. So this is the one, The Island of the Sea Women is about the Korean island that was occupied by the Japanese. But and although the women that fish, that dive for clams and things like that, it's all done by women. And so the men take care of the children.
Fantastic.
So it's a novel that's kind of based in that.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Well, I just went to Korea with Hyung Suk Shin, with the girl who wrote Loneliness.
Really?
Which Matthew Sharapa had recommended for Women in Translation Month last August. So I had bought it. I think what happened was I'd ordered it then, but it took a while to come and then the moment was lost, but I finally got to it.
Oh, okay.
So better late than never. So I just finished that. We're doing that on the podcast in the next sort of week or two. So I do feel like I've been right there. I've been in South Korea. Living in the factory and so on. So that would be a different side, a more. What,
is there anything that you're reading next?
Well, I've gone to crime because I am going to do a list of, I think I'll do a top 10 crime novels to read during the pandemic, because a lot of people seem to want crime at the moment, and I love crime as an escapist read. So I'm just, and I've got in my head, I've got about 10 that I could just easily recommend, but I've got two that I just want to have a bit of a read first that have been recommended to me. So I'm just having a little break with that, because The Girl Who Wrote Loneliness and An American Sunrise both really were very rich and not at all, not heavy, but very thought provoking. And so I'm having a bit of a, not a palate cleanser, but whatever you call it, when you just need something a bit easy and light. And so I'm doing that at the moment. But the next one I think we're doing is The Wandering by Intan Paramedita, who's an Indonesian Australian author. And of course, I want to read The Glass Hotel by Emily St. John Mandel.
Yes.
Have you read that yet?
I have read that. Yeah, I liked it better than Station 11, which is the one everyone always is over the moon about, right? But
wow,
I thought it was so interesting.
I'm going in with very high expectations. But that's always dangerous.
Do you know a lot about finance sector of things?
Yes and no. Yes,
because it
and
does
no.
figure in pretty heavily. I just went into it without knowing what it was about. So
yeah, it's the Bernie Madoff Ponzi scheme, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, so it is.
I know a little bit about that, and I think that would be a really fun subject matter for a novel. So
yeah,
that's kind of what I feel like reading right now, actually, something like that. And the other one that we're excited about coming up is The Bass Rock by Evie Wilde.
Oh, I didn't realize that she had a new one.
Okay. Yes. So I think it's relatively new, in the last month or two. I could be wrong. A few months ago, I think it was released, and I'd heard Simon Savage raving about it. And then I saw it in the bookshop, and it was just one of those days where I thought, well, I keep hearing about this book, so I don't know her work. Although I'd heard of her, but I just haven't read anything yet. So this is where I'm going to start, I think.
I think that's what happens, is you start hearing about these books from like the UK booktuber people, but then it might not come out in the States for another year. And so you're like, where is that book?
Yeah. Well, the same here, the same in Australia. So definitely vice versa as well.
Yeah.
And it's weird how all the publication dates are different. So
someday we'll get that fixed.
Yeah. Well, at the moment, I think there won't be so many. There'll be some delays anyway with publication. So yes, we'll all just have to read our TBR.
Yeah, it's good for us.
It's actually good for me. Yeah, that's right. Well, Jenny, it's been so lovely to chat with you, and I'm so glad we did An American Sunrise and got our poetry game going.
Me too. Thank you, Anna. That was very nice.
Yeah. And so I'll be back next week with Amanda doing The Girl Who Wrote Loneliness, or with Annie doing a isolation reading recommendations. But in the meantime, you can follow us on Facebook at Books on the Go, and I'm on Instagram, Twitter, and Litzy at A Bailey Karras. And Jenny, how can people follow you and the Reading Envy podcast?
I am at Reading Envy everywhere, and all those places will link to where you can subscribe and listen.
Fantastic. Good, good. Well, we'll see you next week, and thank you very much again, Jenny.
Thank you.